The Gestalt Gardener podcast is brought to you by Varicosity Vein Center, providing health assessment screenings and compassionate care to improve your vascular functionality and quality of life. Our doctors and vein specialists offer solutions to painful varicose veins, spider veins, and other venous diseases to our patients. Now offering complimentary vein screenings in Jackson, Madison, and Ridgeland. Information and appointment scheduling at varicosityveincenter.com.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.
The Russian, we're going to talk about gardening. I know it's hot and it's humid, and occasionally some of us get a little bit of rain, just enough to make things steam. But hey, that's what it's about in the dog days of July and August. So we're going to sort of hunker down, pretend like we live in Minnesota in the middle of the winter, except it ain't, and it ain't. That's all right, folks. Hey, if you've got some things you'd like to talk about related to your garden or anything garden-related, whether it's lawns or shrubs or landscaping or vegetables or fruits or pruning or bugs or blah, whatever. If you want to chat about it, this is a good chance to talk with somebody who, first of all, I care. Second of all, I got university training. But third of all, I don't really care about university training. I just want to try to have a better garden with less input if possible. So if you're into challenges, I do my best to help you. If you're looking for a way out of challenges, that's my specialty. Anyway, if you want to give us a call, it's toll-free, 1-877-MPB-RING, 1-877-MPB-RING. We'll talk with you about whatever's on your gardening mind. I mean, that's just what we're going to do here. Hey, Java, how the kids holding up in the summertime?
Oh, they having a good time. You know, we celebrate the 4th of July, so they got a chance to get in the pool and go to Nana's and Mr. C's house and have a good time, eat some barbecue, you know.
Yep. Okay. Well, you know, do they have access to swimming pool? Y'all got a little backyard pool or something? Can you take them any place? Because I mean, that's what we do in the summertime, or should anyway.
Yeah, it's one of those little inflatable ones. I mean, you know, they're still under the age, both of them under the age of six, so we don't want it too deep, but it's just enough for them to have a little fun, splash around, and get daddy
yep.
wet.
Hey, well, you know, the swimming pools, they'll leave a big yellow spot in the grass, but that's okay. It just reminds you what happened. And I am curious, though, who mows the grass in your family? I'm not trying to get too personal here, but, man, it's hot out there.
Yeah, it is. And my dad, at their house, he has like a riding lawnmower. So when I moved out, I guess all the pushing stopped, and then he decided to get the riding lawnmower.
There you go. Well, you know, I don't have any grass at all in my yard. Some people think that means I don't like grass, and it's just the exact opposite. I'm actually a turf guy. I work with golf courses and home gardens, you know, landscape maintenance people. And, you know, if anybody has problems with their lawn, I'll do the best I can of answering from a training point of view, but also kind of from a practical point of view. There's a lot of – I just got my first email this past week and – from somebody who I think has already started to see chinch bugs in their St. Augustine. Chinch bugs are little small members of the stink bug family. They're not much bigger than ants. And they fold their wings over the back so they look like they've got white spots, little black things. They're real fast, so they're hard to catch, so they'll fold their legs up and drop on the ground, even if you pass your hand over the area. But typically what they cause in the middle of the summer is mostly St. Augustine, sometimes centipede, but big yellow dying areas. And I get this, the difference between diseases, which usually cause a curve or a circle, chinch bug damage is real raggedy. It's irregular. It's random. There's no curve or circle to it at all. But anyway, if you've got St. Augustine, be on the lookout because chinch bugs really like hot, dry weather, especially in full sun. And as they feed on the plants, they suck sap out of it. They inject a poison that actually kills the grass. And I've got a good friend named Robert, who he lost his grass on a slope. We ended up putting some Asiatic jasmine because it was too steep to mow anyway. But if you start to see yellow, ragged areas turning, that look like they're dying in the sun in the middle of the summer, chances are chinch bugs. And if you don't spray for them, you know, whether you like sprays or not, not my, you know, I'm just saying, since those are not that easy to kill, you got to spray a couple of times, about a week apart, to make sure you get them all, including some that hatch out since you sprayed the first time. So anyway, if you've got questions about lawn care, give me a shout. I'll be glad to yak with you. Meanwhile, let's go up to Walls, which is about as far north in Mississippi Delta as you can get before getting to Memphis, and talk with Nancy. Good morning, Nancy. Howdy.
Well, hi, Felder. I'm good. How are you?
So far, so good. What's up?
Okay. I have a tulip poplar, and I'm very, very fond of it. It's about 10 years old, and I planted it when it was about 6 inches high. I dug it up. The leaves on the lower branches are turning black. They have black stuff all over them, and even the branches themselves are black, and on the underside of the branches are these little small copper-colored little bead things, and I don't know what's wrong.
Yeah.
And it's not affecting the upper part of the tree.
Well, what you see is pretty common on magnolias and relatives, and tulip poplars related to magnolias.
Right.
If you look at those bumpy things, are a type of insect called a scale. The scale, they crawl out from eggs under the old scale, and they hook on to twigs and branches, and they attach themselves and lose their legs and cover themselves with kind of a waxy covering. And so basically they're like plant ticks with a covering. And as they suck sap out, some of the juice passes on through and drips out their rear end, and that's what that sticky stuff is, and that black sooty mold is growing on that sticky stuff. So, sort of like mold will grow on syrup if you leave it on the kitchen cabinet. So it's not going to be easy. If you can go out with just a pair of gloves on, just rub off as many of those things as you can. That'll get rid of them for the most part this year. Not much else you can do because you can't really spray for something that covers itself up in a waxy gob.
Right. So just pull off the little copper-colored things?
Yeah, if you'll mash one, you'll see it's gooey inside. It's an insect that covers itself with a little scale. It doesn't have legs anymore, but it covers itself like it's sort of like a turtle shell over it, waxy turtle shell. And
right.
you pop one, you see what's like. Anyway, just rub them off. The most common one is about as big as the end of your little finger. It's kind of a white-colored thing. But there's all sorts of different scale that can do this. Anyway, rub them off as best you can because it can actually kill some twigs on trees.
Oh, okay. Well, I did cut off the lower branches.
Yeah, you can do that. But scale are real common. They're like mosquitoes. You know, they will show up in the upper part of the tree sooner or later. But if you cut branches off, don't leave a stub. Cut a branch flush with the limb, or the limb flush with the trunk, so it doesn't rot into the trunk. They're really fast-growing trees anyway.
Okay, will do. I appreciate it. Thank you, Felder.
Okay, good luck on it. Appreciate your call. Oh, I had a real interesting week this past week with a bunch of emails. I'm going to share a few with you. But meanwhile, we're here talking about gardening, whatever's on your mind. Let's go all the way back down to the Gulf Coast of Pascagoula. Good morning, Beth. How are you doing?
I'm great, Felder. How are you?
Good. What's up?
Well, a few years ago, the city dug up half my backyard to improve the drainage, and I'm very happy they improved the drainage, but they piled, I guess, red field dirt on top of the pipes, and now the grass that is growing on top of the pipes for the last 2 years has just been not as good as the grass in the rest of my yard, and I want to know if I can use compost or something to top dress it and improve it.
Well, yes and no. The grass is growing in two different kinds of soil, two different kinds of dirt. It's always going to have different root system and needing more or less water than the other one. You know, in bad dirt, the grass will dry out quicker, and it'll be stunted. Rather than just top dress with something like compost, which will just disappear, if you can go to an equipment rental place and rent what they call an aerator. It runs like a lawnmower, powered lawnmower, but it punches holes in the ground. And if you could do that, put the compost or some dirt or some sand, and then aerate it, the stuff will go down those holes and make them more or less permanent, and grass roots will follow them down to the bottom of those holes real quick. And then as those roots die naturally, new roots will follow their pathway. The aerating will probably do as much as better than anything. And you can rent them by, use a couple of hours.
Okay, now I've seen aerators, and they just take a little plug of dirt out, right? How deep down do they go?
Yeah, there's two kinds of aerator. One just has spikes, and it punches holes in the ground. One pulls plugs out. They're actually better. It works better if you've got soft dirt, like after rain or something like that. You know, a day or so after rain, it works a whole lot better than rattling across the top. And when it does that, next time you mow the grass, the mower will just, you know, knock those plugs into just nothing. So you don't have to worry about raking them up. The mower will take care of the plugs it leaves up there.
Okay, well, thank you for that. I'll try it in the fall.
I know it sounds like a lot of trouble, but really. Hey, by the way, do you water your grass? Are you able to water?
Oh, yes, but I don't have to water it that much. But, yes, I do water it, and, you know, and I followed your rule about watering it deep and not so frequently.
There you go. That's the key. So once you can get the pathway for the roots to get down deep where air can penetrate, roots will quickly go to the bottom. Within 2 or 3 weeks, you could dig up some of those holes, and it'll just be full of grass roots down at the bottom. It really does make a dramatic effect. It's not necessary.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you for your answer.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
All righty. By the way, folks, there's something going on the coast starting in a month or so. NSU has a research and extension center over on I forgot the name of it, Topps Ferry. Anyway, Dr. James Dale Prince is a horticulture specialist with the NSU Coastal Research Station, and he's also an internationally famous celebrity floral designer. But he's going to have a whole series of classes that are going to start up, I guess, in about towards the end of August. And I'm going to be giving a little bit more information about that. But if you can, I'm just trying to find my notes here if I can. Anyway, I can't undo my notes right now and talk at the same time. So I'll give the email or the website information in just a second. But there is going to be a series of courses, both series and one-shot workshops on floral design and all sorts of things related to that. They're in Biloxi on Pottsville Road. I'll get some information about that in just a little while. Meanwhile, let's stay on the coast and let's go to – before we do that, let me throw out this. There was a lady called last week named Susan Owens from Memphis, and she has a poem that she did, which I thought was really, really cool, and I asked her if she would send it to me, which she did. And I want to share it with you. It's real short. And this is from Susan Owens from Memphis. Here's what it was. And it's about a native plant called lizard tail. We had things to do. Who knew how prolific lizard plants grew? We planted them imagining only beauty, but then tending them became less joy, more duty. Heat, burning sun, and mosquitoes we dreaded while the lizard plants became embedded. Like a giant army, they marched across the little plants, treading on their toes. They towered above the garden ornaments and covered up my favorite fairy rose. Nice, huh? Anyway, thanks, Susan Owens, for sending that to me. And while on this artist-listener note, a guy I know from up in the Delta in Belzona named Gus Mohammed, he's a way cool nurse from Belzona, did 20 years of radio before coming on Nurse. Anyway, he has a little band called Big Daddy, the First Street Players, and he did... And his music has been featured on Mississippi Roads. Anyway, he just did a little ditty about this program, and I thought it was only a minute long. So let's play that little ditty from Gus Mohammed and then go right into a break, and we'll come back with your live phone calls about gardening in the Deep South in July. Here is Gus Mohammed in a tune that he calls Aphids on My Snap Beans.
I've got aphids on my snap beans. I've got white flies on my peas. I've got weevils on my bok choy that have brought me to my knees. I've got stink bugs in my okra, and the slugs have set up home. I've got hornworms on my peppers. Get Felder on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
horticulturist Phil DeRussin. Last week, I got a lot of respondents to my request for first-person accounts of a fairly new mosquito control product that's invented by a fellow from Hattiesburg called Spartan Mosquito Eradicator. I just wanted to hear people who've actually used it that I can know tell me something good about it. Anyway, everybody says it works just fine. But I also got one from a woman on the coast who some years ago sampled me with her personally concocted mosquito repellent. It works great when you put it on your skin, but this thing called Spartan Mosquito Eradicator, which again, sounds like I'm advertising, but really I'm just trying to get people to see how well it works and support Mississippi product. It's supposed to keep the critters out of the garden. Anyway, a little bit more on that later. Meanwhile, let's go back down the Gulf Coast to Bay St. Louis. Good morning, Carol. How are you?
Hello.
Hey, Carol. You're on the air. Can I help you? Selger.
Yeah. Hi. We moved here to the coast kind of recently from Nebraska, where, by the way, I listened to your program with Dr. Dirt and really enjoyed it in Nebraska. But we moved here, and, you know, growing things in your backyard is not as easy as it was. Our soil is very loam and a lot of sand. And we had a guy from the extension office come over and do an analysis, and he said that our soil is extremely nitrogen poor. And so I was looking up. We tried to supplement last year, and that didn't work out very well. All the rain seemed to just take everything away. So I was wondering, could we use clover as a nitrogen fixing? Would that work better for our soil than trying to artificially put in the chemicals?
Well, yes and no. And let me back up just a bit. You know, I retired extension. I did that for a long, fully retired. Didn't quit, didn't get fired, didn't blow a vein. I actually retired. And I actually tested soil samples for the extension service when I first started there. And they don't even test for nitrogen. We assume that nitrogen doesn't last from year to year. And I mean, they don't even have a test for it. So basically what he was saying was you're good in everything else. And all you really need is a little nitrogen. So that's what he's really saying. Unfortunately, the printout from the university recommends this so-called ammonium nitrate, which is like, it's an agriculture product. It's like cocaine to the garden. It's a terrible product to use at home because it's really strong, really fast, and very temporary. If you want to grow clover here in the deep south and along the coast, it grows best over the winter. You plant the stuff in the fall. It dies down in the spring. And then, you know, you cut it, and its roots, which hold the nitrogen, slow release it. To me, you'd be a little bit better off just using a slow-acting type of nitrogen. And if you go with something natural, there's this stuff called cottonseed meal. Up north, you probably used alfalfa meal or something like that. The cottonseed meal, a light application of that, not only provides slow-acting nitrogen, but it also feeds earthworms, which in turn dig better dirt for you. So you can do the clover thing if you want in the fall. But to me, using a slow-acting type of nitrogen, whether it's a synthetic product like with having lawn foods or something like cottonseed meal, it gets a long, slow, steady feeding. But we just have to assume that nitrogen does not last. They don't even test for that.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Okay, it sounds like that I might have just stirred up some muddy water, but if you want to shoot me an email, I speak Nebraska, western Nebraska, more so, where it's really, really difficult growing stuff. So I'll be glad to help you a bit more on that. But main thing is, if you want some more information, just shoot me an email. Be glad to help.
I sure will. Thanks so much.
All righty. When it comes to fertilizer, there's so much confusion out there. And the fact is, plants need a little extra help. They need nutrients, just like you need to feed your cat every now and then. It's not that big a deal. But you do need to fertilize plants. Some of the ingredients in fertilizer last a long time, like phosphorus and potash, but nitrogen simply burns up and gets used up, and it doesn't last long. They don't even test for that. So if they say you're low in nitrogen, what they mean is, you need nitrogen. We didn't test for it. We just know you need a little bit. Main thing is don't overdo it, because too much nitrogen fertilizer will make plants grow green whether they want to or not. Sometimes it'll make fruiting plants like tomatoes and peppers and things like that grow so fast they throw the fruits off. So a little bit of nitrogen once or twice a year is all you need. You can just assume that. So anyway, if you want to give me a call and talk about gardening, 1-877-MPB-RING. 877 means it's toll-free. MPB stands for Mississippi Public Broadcasting, and RING is what it does, and Kevin Farrell will pick it right up and punch you through. 1-877-MPB-RING. I'm horticulturist Phil DeRussian. I got an email from Jenny Campbell, who lives up in Taylor, Mississippi. She has a purple butterfly bush that doesn't look happy. The leaves are yellow, and it's not blooming that well. Her question is, should she deadhead it? By the way, deadheading just means cutting off faded flowers and seed pods. This keeps the plant from wasting time making seeds. Instead, it stimulates a real fast new growth that'll flower. Butterfly bushes, buddleia, as some people call it, are notorious about making flowers and then stopping. As long as they got those dead flower stalks on the ends of the branches, they're just going to sit there. So if you want to keep a butterfly bush doing really good, as soon as the branch gets through blooming, just break it off or snip it off or prune it off or something like that, and almost immediately it'll sprout out some new stems that have new flowers on it, just like a rose will. So that's just sort of a given with buddleias, at least in the deep south. Also, let me see. Well, I had another email I wanted to share. I can't find it right now, but let me throw this out. This is something kind of interesting. As a matter of fact, it'll sort of take us into to the cheesy tune of the year. I do want you to give me a call. We're going to be until 10 o'clock talking about, or 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock on Fridays, 10 to 11 on Saturdays. So if you want to give us a call, we got more than 30 minutes to just chat about gardening. Toll free, 1-877-MPB-RING. Before I get into my little hort tidbit of the week, let's talk with Walter. He's also near the Gulf Coast in Wool Market. Hey, Walter, how are you?
Hey, Phil, I'm good. How are you? Hey, I've got a question. I've got blueberries that are tapering off from picking and wondering when to prune and how to prune. They're about 8 to 10 feet tall, so about 8 or 10 bushels.
Okay, I'm having a little bit of difficulty here, and I'm a long ways off. What was the plant again? What was the question?
Blueberry plants, are wondering when to prune, how to prune. They're tapering off, can't pick any more blueberries, and they're about 8 to 10 feet tall.
Gotcha. There's two ways to prune, two different things that need to be done with blueberries for pruning. One is, three things. The third one is don't do any pruning past the end of this month. No pruning at all, because the new growth that comes out, they have time to mature and set flower buds before fall. So if you do any pruning, this is the last month. So the two ways you prune is when you get through picking the tall stuff you're having trouble reaching, as soon as you get through picking it, just cut it down to knee-high or waist-high. Just cut it down. It'll sprout back out the rest of the year, and that new growth will have flower buds and berries next year. So that's the hard part, cutting the tall stuff down as soon as you get through picking. The other way is from the spring until about now, any new growth that comes up, whether suckers come up from the ground or twigs on some of the low branches, any of the new growth that came out this year, cut it back about a third or halfway, and it will bush out. Instead of being long and skinny, it'll bush out more twigs, more flowers, more berries next year. So to snip the tips off the new growth, in the spring and early summer, and then cut the tall stuff back when you get through picking it. And that's pretty much it.
Okay, sounds pretty easy. So we got about, you said another month to do our pruning, and then don't do anything after that?
No. Let's do it as soon as you can. The sooner you get it done, the more time the new growth will have time to come out and mature.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Are you through picking now?
Yeah. They're getting kind of slim.
Go ahead and cut it back. You know, the sooner the better.
And Fowler, enjoy the show. Thank you so much.
All right, appreciate it. I get a lot of calls about pruning blueberries. They're sort of like figs, you know, but they're kind of, there's a couple little tricks to it. But anyway, if you want to give me a call, it's toll-free 1-877-MPB-RING. Let's talk to Johanna in Jackson. Good morning, Johanna. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. What's up?
I want to call you about, nobody else is going to care about this but me. I've got three favorite wildflowers, and one of them is that blue flower that blooms at the same time the goldenrod does. It makes kind of a periwinkle blue, and it's gotten real leggy and laid over. But the other thing about the top of the plants, they're contorted, and deformed and everything, and I've wondered about going and maybe cutting them off halfway if it still bloomed this fall, or if there was, or what's wrong with them?
No, no, you can do that. Is this a real light blue, or is it a rich purple royal purple blue?
It's like that periwinkle blue. They make those little small fluffy flowers, little clusters of them on the top.
Yeah, that's wild azuratum. A lot of people call it. It's got a Latin name. This, you know, colostinum, something. I can't remember the whole name. But anyway, if you want to, things like goldenrod, narrowleaf sunflower, the wild azuratum, those fall blooming things. If you cut them back a halfway to a third now, they should have plenty of time for the new growth to come out to a flower bud before fall. But let's get it done as soon as you can.
Okay. Is there something wrong with them? Do they have a disease or a virus or something? Were they making that
concern? I don't know. I don't know. If there's either way you could send me a real clear close-up picture of it, you know, I can make an educated guess, but there's, you know, it could be an insect, it could be bad weather, it could be fire. I just don't know without looking at it.
Okay, but, can I ask you one more question?
Pruning will help. Let's just go ahead and get it done as soon as you can.
Okay.
By the way, I have goldenrod and that tall narrowleaf sunflower in my garden, and I always cut them back in the late spring, early summer, so that they're bushy with more flowers instead of tall and floppy.
That's what I want to do then. Can I ask you one more question?
Sure.
What is the best time to spray the camellias for white flies? I've done it once. I should have done it more. I've been bad about it. Is there a particular time to get them when they're in their cycle or something? Or
nope. White flies, like mosquitoes, they come as they will. The adults lay the eggs. The young ones hatch out. They fly around and lay more eggs. And that can happen pretty much from spring to fall. There's no way to prevent that from happening. So the best thing to do would be to every now and then, if they're really bad, I mean, if they're bothering you a lot, if you just can't ignore them, spray the underside of the leaves late in the day with insecticidal soap. That will control the larvae. Insecticidal soap won't get them all, but it's a safe product. It works well on the young ones, but they're closer on the bottom side of the leaves in the evening. If you do that a couple of times a week apart when they get really, really bad, that'll knock the worst of them down. It's rare that they're going to seriously hurt a plant that much, but this will knock the worst. Two sprays a week apart, underside of the leaves late in the day.
Okay. Well, I had gotten some soap from Hutto's, some of that oil soap, and I'd sprayed them. I let them get really, really bad, and I felt really ashamed. These are some really old, kind of antique camellias, and I'd never done it. And most of the leaves were yellow, and I thought, oh, my gosh. Okay, well, I'm going to do that then.
Okay, good luck on it. By the way, folks, this is a little hort tidbit of the week, an interesting horticulture thing. A banana is botanically a berry. Believe it or not, a banana is a berry, like a blueberry. And it's also grown the world's largest herbaceous flowering plant. Bananas are the top fruit eaten in America. We average something like 28 or 30 pounds per person. That's over 100 bananas per person on average per year. Anyway, regardless whether you like a firm, nearly green one, or soft brown speckled mushroom ones, they're pretty much the same. They're good for you, unless you have diabetes and you don't want that sugar spike. Eat them when they're green. Don't wait till they turn mushy if you got problems with sugar. Anyway, 100 years or so ago, early part of last century, the most popular market banana was called Gros Michel, or the Big Mike banana. It was the main variety grown all over the world. It became infected with a real serious banana disease. And we have a replacement called Cavendish. Almost all the bananas grown, sold in the world are Cavendish, and they're starting to get the same disease. Okay, the reason I'm saying all that, because scientists have just found a small group of tough, ancient, big-seeded wild bananas that are resistant to the disease, and they can offer us a chance to crossbreed it with the larger fruit kinds to keep us from losing the fruit altogether. Trouble is, there ain't but five of these trees left in the world. Stay tuned. Now think hard about how dependent we are on just a few varieties of certain plants like corn, which could be wiped out quickly if a new disease crops up. Something about preserving diversity and all that. Anyway, as a nod to bananas, I thought I had exposure to this old tune from 1922 Broadway play. It was inspired by a severe shortage of a Big Mike banana fruit 100 years ago.
There's a fruit store It's run by a Greek, and he keeps good things to eat, but you should hear him speak. When you ask him anything, he never answers no. He just yeses you to death, and as he takes your dough, he tells you, yes, of course, we have no bananas. We have no bananas today. We've string beans and onions, cabbages and scallions, and all kinds of fruit. And say, we have an old-fashioned tomato, a Long Island potato. But yes, we have no bananas. We have no bananas today. Business got so good with him, he wrote home to say, send me Pete and Nick and Jim, I need help right away. When he got them in the store, there was fun, you bet. Someone asked for sparrowgrass, and then the whole quartet all answered, yes, we have no bananas. We have no bananas today. Just try those coconuts, those walnuts, and donuts. There ain't many nuts like they. We'll sell you two kinds of red herring, dark brown and ball bearing. But yes, we have no bananas. We have no bananas today. You got a banana? No? Yes? Banana? No? Yes? No, no. No, no banana today. No banana today.
If you're a sustaining member of MPB Think Radio, we appreciate your support of our programs. To become a sustainer, go to mpbonline.org.
And we're back. Java Chapman here. Waiting on Felder. We, you know, it's a live program, so we had a little technical difficulty. But if you want to join the conversation, that number is 1-877-672-7464. And number once again is 1-877-672-MPB-RING. That's 672-7464. And I believe we have Felder back on the line. Felder, are you back with us, man?
I am. You know, he sent me a text, and it made a little beep sound, and I looked down, I saw the phone number, and I thought, oh, my gosh, it dropped my call, so I hung up. So I pushed the wrong button that time. Sorry, Java.
We all right, man. We just got to get back. We got a full board of calls, though.
Okie dokie. Well, there's a couple of things I want to share, but let's go direct to the call. Let's start out with Wayne in Jackson. Hey, Wayne, good morning, sir.
Hey, I can barely hear you.
Well, I can hear you fine. What's up?
I have two questions. In the spring, I fertilized my St. Augustine grass, and it had 2% iron in it. I would like to put some more iron on the lawn to make it really green.
Yeah.
And the other question is, had my soil analyzed, and it came back as being my potash is low. Can I put potash on my lawn this time of year?
Yes. Let's back up, though. The iron thing is almost a gimmick, because we have typically plenty of iron in our soil. If you'll use this stuff, I know you have St. Augustine, but if you'll use this stuff called Centipede Food, it's got a good amount of slow-acting, long-lasting, gentle nitrogen. It's got low phosphorus, which is great for St. Augustine, and it's got a lot of potassium, enough potassium lasts you for 2 years. So if you'll just use the stuff called Centipede Food once every year or two and recycle your clippings, Centipede Food also typically has a little extra nitrogen in it. So that one product will give St. Augustine and Centipede pretty much all the nutrients, including winterizer, that your grass needs, just one or two feedings every couple of years or so. Seriously.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay, good luck on it. Appreciate it. Now, let's stay in Jackson, talk with Jim. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Felder. Jim Rosenblatt.
Yes, sir. What's up?
Our crepe myrtles on Griffith Street in front of the law school this year were absolutely magnificent. But I'm curious because at this stage, their bark is all peeling off. Is that the only tree in which the bark peels off?
Well, not really. It's called exfoliating bark, and river birches do it. Some crepe myrtles do it. I call it better than others. Some people may call it worse. To me, that's just a beautiful part of the crepe myrtle. But crepe myrtles, river birches, certain hickories, blueberries, they all have that, what they call exfoliating bark. And it's actually kind of pretty. And it's funny when I see a squirrel slip on it, too.
Well, the bark looks so shiny, smooth, and green underneath when the old bark comes off.
Yeah, that's just part of it. You know, we're the same way, Doc, every time. You know, if you take a shower, you come out looking all clean and pretty, too.
I think I'll go take a shower, Felder. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Thanks for your call, Dean. Appreciate that. Okay, our number is toll-free, 1-877-MPB-RING. You want to give us a call and talk about gardening? We'll muddle through it. I've got technical problems. They're on my end, not MPB's end. But I mentioned James Dell Prince, a hort specialist with the Extension Service out on the coast. He's a really famous celebrity floral designer. Anyway, he scheduled some really interesting floral design classes starting this fall, late August, and continuing with new ones every month. If you want information or registration about it, I'll touch on each one before they come up. But in general, if you'll go to this email, this website, it's coastal.msstate.edu, coastal.msstate.edu. If you have some trouble with that, shoot me an email. By the way, I answer email during the week. If you have a question or comment or want to add something or get me to really touch on something a little bit more in depth, or maybe you want to take umbrage at the way I put something, it doesn't matter to me. I'm not prophet. I'm here to learn just like the rest of y'all and to share what I know. But you can shoot me an email about your garden or your concerns, garden@mpbonline.org. garden@mpbonline.org. Our live phone call right now is 1-877-MPB-RING. Let's slide down to Port Gibson. Good morning, Linda. How are you?
I'm fine. I understand you're having technical problems, but
yeah, a little bit.
I just want to know, I keep buying aloe vera plants from plant food places, and I get them home and put them in a pot. They don't grow. What am I doing wrong, or what technique should I use?
Well, I grow a lot of different kind of cactus and succulents, and aloe vera is a type of succulent. What they like is a pretty well-drained potting soil that doesn't ever stay wet. In other words, when you water it, it soaks it up. If you water it again, the extra turf runs out the bottom. Really important that they have good drainage. They like to be kept a little on the moist side. You can let them get dry between soakings. Main thing is don't let them stay dry and don't keep them wet. They also, even though they go out in the sun, in a place like South Africa where they're native, they won't take the full sun here because of their humidity. So put it in a place that's as bright as possible, but not in the middle of the day direct sunshine. So other than bright light and an occasional good soaking without letting it stay too wet or too dry, that's about all we can do. You can also try putting it, Linda, in not too big a pot, because a big pot can temporarily stay wetter than the plants need. So you might want to put them in some smaller pots.
Okay. I'll try that.
You bet, Linda. If you have some more specific questions about that, you know, shoot me an email. I've got my favorite potting soil recipe, and I grow, again, a lot of cactus and succulents. And instead of growing the stuff right out of the bag, if I could recommend one specific product, I don't get paid by these people, but I'm just going to say that the potting soil that's called Miracle-Gro is a pretty good formulation. It drains well, but it doesn't dry out too fast. But if you get any kind of potting soil and add this white, crunchy stuff they call perlite, P-E-R-L-I-T-E, you get a real small bag of perlite and mix it with a good bit of regular potting soil, it gives that little extra drainage that some succulents need. Maybe that'll help. All righty, folks, if you want to give us a call, it's toll-free 1-877-MPB-RING. Let's go down down right in the middle of Mississippi, to McGee. Hey, Spencer, good morning.
Good morning, brother. What are you doing?
So far, so good. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I hear you just fine, brother.
Yes. I've got some really tight earphones here. That's not working that well. Anyway, what can I help you with?
Oh, that's good. What I've been wondering is since the last time I've seen you down there at all, I was trying to find out if there's an alternative to cutting your grass all the time. And I know you do some different things like that as far as just planting different plants. I've got an acre, and I'm putting in fruit trees as I can and as I go. But I'm trying to figure out a different alternative to keeping either a short type of grass that I don't have to mow so much versus this bahia that I have to cut every 3 days. Or if there's some kind of like small ground cover that I can, you know, reestablish and put in over the top of this grass.
Well, it's a good question, and I know it's a real pain to take care of a big acreage. I've had to do that in my youth, and I gradually got down to where I just don't have any. I work with a good number of fruit growers, both commercial and large-scale homeowners, and basically what they try to do is keep the grass completely clear out directly up under the trees, you know, in a little circle 4 or 5 feet across. You know, try to cut that as close as possible, and then as needed, cut the taller stuff in the middle. You can plant a cover crop in the fall like clover or, you know, vetch or something like that, and then when it starts to flower in the spring, you can cut it down, and it'll actually feed the whole area. But if you've got plenty of sunshine, Bermuda grass is probably your best bet out there. Anyway, there's not a good ground cover for big acres. Better than just simply mow what grows. And if it gets 6 inches, 8 inches tall, that's okay. Get you a bush hog. But keep under the plants themselves cut fairly often, and the in between stuff just when you absolutely have to. And there's no real good way around that without using herbicides, and I don't think that's a great idea.
No, I'm against it too. But that's what I was trying to figure out, because I want to change. I'm just so tired of cutting an acre, I guess is what I'm getting at. And that's what. So you're saying Bermuda grass would be a better choice than this bahia, I'm sure.
Well, if you got that, you know, once you got bahia, you're pretty well stuck with it, because there's nothing. Even if you want to use weed killers, what will kill bahia will kill just about everything else. The main thing is bahia. You know, it's most of the seed heads that really bother you. So what I would do is I would just get in the habit of getting you like a small bush hog and cutting the big swaths, you know, every month or month and a half as needed, and then just, you know, mow up under the plants, keeping it off the trunks. There's nothing worse than a fruit tree than hitting it with the trunk of it, a lawnmower or a string trimmer. But if you can protect the trunk and keep the stuff cut under the trees, I would just mow the other stuff when you just absolutely have to. In Europe, in England, where I am a lot of time, they actually let it get almost knee-high in between the trees.
Really?
But they don't have to deal with, you know, 85 degrees, 3 in the morning like we do.
No, yeah.
All right. No easy way around it, man.
All right, I appreciate it, man.
Okay, good luck on it. Appreciate your call. Okay, folks, we're going to take a real, real quick break. We got lots of time. If you want to give us a call at toll-free 1-877-MPB-RING. If you have emails, questions during the week, shoot them to me, garden@mpbonline.org. And I want to mention that the Mississippi Press Association sends my weekly columns to the local, weekly, and daily newspapers around the state. Peers doesn't carry it. I know that ink and space are tight, but if you want a local, timely, seasonal, nonprofit garden column, it ain't your usual ho-hum how-to advice. Check with your local paper, see if they want to carry my column. Doesn't cost them anything if they belong to the Mississippi Press Association. This week is about dirt and soil, the difference between the two, and how to make one or the other. I'm going to be right back with more of the Gestalt Garden here on MPB right after this.
MPB News is leading the way, covering stories that matter to Mississippians, with 5 first place awards from the Associated Press, including breaking news, radio achievement, and public affairs reporting. Your source for a deeper look at today's top story is MPB News.
Okay, folks, welcome back again. This past Monday, it was just 4 days ago, I was at the what they call media day, press day at the Hampton Court Flower Show, the Royal Horticulture Society Hampton Flower Show. It's also in London like the Chelsea Show, but I try to get to all these flower shows. I'm usually on press day where I can interview people. Anyway, this past week I did an interview. I'm going to run parts of it over the next few weeks with probably England's top garden guru. His name is Alan Tishmarsh. Anybody from Great Britain knows Alan Tishmarsh. He's just a garden guru. Anyway, I interviewed him. I've known him for several years. And he has some real interesting things to talk about, heritage plants, pass-along plants, wildflower meadows, things like that. So, anyway, the Hampton Court Flower Show had a lot of really, really cool stuff. But they're emphasizing native plants, wildflowers, pollinators, water features, arbors, informal planting, things like that that cut down on maintenance and watering and spraying and things like that. So if you're interested in that approach, shoot me an email during the week, garden@mpbonline.org. And I'll play the interview with part of the interview with Alan Tishmarsh starting next week. Meanwhile, let's fly down to Poplarville. Good morning, Tim. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. How are you today?
Good, good, good. What's up?
Thank you for taking my call. My work, I travel around South Mississippi a lot on these roadways. I see large patches of dead grass. I keep thinking that they're spraying some sort of herbicide just randomly all over the place. And I was talking to a friend of mine who's a fireman, says it's some sort of evasive grass, chiosac or something like that, he called it, that they're trying to eradicate from the area. I just wonder if you know anything about that.
Yeah, that would be cogon grass, C-O-G-O-N, cogon grass. You've probably seen it. It grows kind of low, and when it flowers, it has little really white, low flowers. It looks like almost like cotton blowing in the wind. It's low and just a lot of little low white seed head type things. That's cogon grass, and it really is causing problems, partly because it's invasive, and when it catches on fire, it burns hotter than other grasses. It can kill trees and stuff like that where other grasses just burn. But anyway, cogon grass is probably one of our top 10 invasive weeds, sort of like the low-growing version of kudzu. That's probably what they're doing. I'll be honest, I don't know if it's going to help that much. They're just trying to keep it at bay, but I think that cat's already out of the bag, because that stuff is everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah, like I said, just trying to figure out why there's so many large dead patches. Thank you for taking my call. Have a good day.
Okay, you bet. Appreciate it, man. Okay, bye-bye. Now we got time for another call. Let's slide over to Hammond, Louisiana. Hey, is it Liam? Liam?
It's Liam. Hi.
Liam.
My name's Liam. I'm a 10-year-old boy. I grow watermelons every year. I was wondering what exact time I should pick them.
Oh boy, that's a really good one, because even old-timer gardeners sometimes don't understand this. It depends on the variety and about how long it is. But if you can gently roll it one over that spot on the bottom, it'll change colors when it's getting towards ripeness. It's hard to explain, but and I don't remember it goes from white to yellow or yellow to white. But that spot where it's sitting on the ground, it'll actually change color. You can also and that's probably the best way. Just keep track of what variety, about how long from when you plant the seeds to when they're supposed to ripen, you know, whether it's 3.5 months or, 90 days or 120. But each variety has about how long from seed to harvest planted on the seed level, the label, the seed package. And, again, that spot will change colors on the bottom. If you go to a farmer's market where they sell watermelons, also talk to them, because they pick them every day, and they may have a nice little trick on your particular variety. But that's always a good – is to talk to people who do it for a living rather than an old guy talking on the radio like me.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Thank you. My brother has a question about his peppers.
Okay, well, we're just about out of time. Can you email me? If you would, shoot me an email, because, I mean, I work with youth gardeners all over the country, but if you shoot me an email, garden@mpbonline.org, we can get a lot more detail. Hey, the Gaston Gardeners Production Mississippi Public Broadcasting, my producers are laid back, hard-working Java Chapman. Phone greeter today was our esteemed Kevin Farrell. I'm your host, Delta Rossi. I've been thinking of all of y'all again out and about. I hope you get a good, slow, soaking rain. Hope it also carries all the aphids and the white flies and stuff away with it. But please, every day is a new day. Get the chance to take some kids to a garden center or a farmer's market and show them how to do what we do best, and that's get dirty. See y'all next week. Shoot me an email, garden@mpbonline.org.